that the feud was going between his friend and the other fellow, and it was going to do a great deal of damage to everybody concerned. It was going to damage the two participants. It was going to damage the party. It was going to damage the country. It was going to damage a number of other people that it would reach out and touch. And it seemed to be tragic for it to go on this way. And before it went any further and these parties were hurt more and other people were hurt, it would be better if in some way it could be stopped. And then we discussed that at some length. I might say I had no suggestions, no observations of any kind. All I did was sit and listen, occasionally ask a question. So the discussion then went along the line, well, what is this? What is this damage that's likely to be done? I wasn't quite sure of just what he was driving at. Well, this whole affair has been very widespread. They can debate till kingdom come who had the right to do it, who knew it, who didn't know it, one thing and another. And yet, the farther it went, the more people would be dragged in, the more embarrassing it might become insofar as friendly people outside the country are concerned, other outfits. And if it weren't stopped, why, then other fellow who I lunched with, his client, would have to take steps to protect himself even further than he had up until now. So I said, well, what is the danger that lies ahead? Well, the fellow said in two areas. First, his client's opponent keeps putting this stuff out. Had three of them that he drops in piecemeal, keeps the running feud going. They understand he's getting ready to drop a fourth one. That keeps it exacerbated. And that he ought to stop that, because that just upsets everybody and it's not going to end up doing anybody any good. Second, that this inquiry that is planned by Ed Long, been announced that that would be public inquiry, and if that were to take place, then he is sure that a great many people would get dragged into it. If he got dragged into it, he's going to see to it that all the other AGs of the past 20 years have got to be called to see what their situation was. People that may be this place inhabit now ought to be called and see what kind of instructions they gave and what kind of information they received and one thing and another like that. And he thinks that that'd be a mistake to go into that whole situation that way, particularly in a public hearing. So I raise the question, well, you're not suggesting that my client, see, I had a client, my client, that would be you, and you're not suggesting that my client can step in the way of that. No, he said, I don't think he can. Well, then I said, that would go on. No, he said, I don't think it has to go on that way. One thing is, they might have executive sessions, which would help some, but you never know how long they stay executive, but he said attention might be given to that. That in that regard, and down here, his client's opponent continues to drop this poison and leak this stuff, maybe pull confidential stuff out of the file and make public that should not be made public, then he said his client might have to go to the head of that committee and ask for a hearing so that he could justify his own position. I might say that quite a bit. So I said, well, if you know, then nobody can interfere with such a hearing. If they decide to start it, you can't get the executive branch. No, he said, I understand. He said the real solution is that this fellow, the one who's making all the none of them seem to be able to implement the control. Well, he said, I don't know. And I said, you know. Just go back over it. Nobody was able to. Your client obviously wasn't able to anyway. And I said, I don't quite get the point. Do you think anybody could? Well, he said, I think that if my client were to understand that the whole affair could be very damaging to the party and to the individuals involved, to the country, and this would make clear to the other party to the dispute here in town, he might be persuaded not to go on, carry on the dispute anymore, and the matter could just be permitted to subside and fade away. And if there was no sharp contest between them, then perhaps there wouldn't be very much interest in having a hearing. And if both the parties to the dispute felt that there was no need to have a hearing, why, the matter might then be shut off in some manner. So this was the general substance of his remarks all the way through. I had no reaction whether or not it was feasible or unfeasible, other than to say that I didn't know anybody who'd ever had any real measure of control, and I didn't see why suddenly he thought that somebody could. Well, he said, that's what seems to us ought to be done. He said, I'm going back and report to my fellow. He said, I appreciate the time that you've given us. We've had a chance now to put our case so that you might consider. I said, well, must have done something else about it, because this has been going on for some time. Yes, he said, a staff member of my client at one time had talked to Califano and Moyers. Neither instance did they think that anything could be done at all. It just wasn't given any attention, and nothing came of it. So his client suggested that he might come down and have this talk to me in the hope that we all might see it as a threat to the country, the party, and the individuals, to see if nothing could be done. End of report.
That's good. I think you ought to know this, and you're at liberty, I think, to say you've explored it any way you want to. I have had no communication at my initiation with his enemy since he left the Attorney General's office. I communicated with through the Attorney General to him. I have never felt that if I tried to influence him one way or the other or make a suggestion to him that it would bear any fruit. On the other hand, I think it would be probably wind up with being interpreted as attempt to fix him, and I've been very, very careful never to do that. I've been told by this fellow's client two or three times when he was there that he wasn't paying attention to any attorney general, and that he thought he was courting me. But I never have seen any evidence of it, and I think that he got in his own mind an illusion that just didn't exist. So much for that. He has not consulted me. The last conversation I had with him that I remember, the only one I had in connection with any of these developments, was he and the AG came to my request, and first week after I got in office, is my memory, I got complaints from the Nevada senators that they were doing this bugging. And I asked the then AG, and I understood from him that that was not happening. And so I asked if they get in touch with the senators and explain it, and they sent somebody up there to tell them it wasn't happening. I believe it was the Assistant Attorney General or something. There's a memo in the files now that reveals they went up, and what they did, they twisted. They had one of their smart journalistic friends to say that they never put a tap or a bug on anybody except in the most highly important, national security and national affairs matters.
Oh,
and national affairs matters means Bobby Kennedy or anybody, Bobby Baker, anybody that opposes you. It's just pretty wide-ranging.
Or maybe anybody having an affair.
Yeah, maybe anybody having an affair. That's where the goddamn thing really gets dangerous. So, I went on to sleep with other things in 64. As you remember, I had Governor King started running him for vice president, and the fella out in Wisconsin started running him. And then he planned to take over the convention. And then I got through with him, I got a hold of Goldwater. And in 65, I got to getting complaints again. I never heard of the Bobby Baker thing. But Bobby Baker did stay the day that he lost his job, that his phone was bugged. And I knew it was.
Okay.
And the reason I knew it was because I said something to him that I never said to my wife or any other human being. And I saw a senator get up on the floor and denounce him for an act of mine. Precisely, it was this. Yarbrough was trying to force himself on Appropriations Committee. And he called me and said, if you make me, I'll change it. I said, I'd like to see him given consideration. He wasn't very friendly. But I want to get him off my neck. And he said, well, I put him on the committee list for another committee. And the leadership usually takes my recommendations. Unless you make me, I'm not going to change it. And I said, well, I don't want to make you do anything, although it would be rather helpful and so on and so forth if you were changed. But I don't want to interrupt what you're doing, and I didn't really care much. But I want to... at least if it's possible and feasible, easy. I didn't want him to think I was trying to dictate Mansfield's job. Well, he went in and submitted the list, and he was, his list prevailed. They just followed what he said. And about 2 days later, Yarbrough didn't get the job, and he got up on the Senate floor and said, I know the conniving going on here. I know the conversations take place. And when some little old clerk comes in here and sets himself up and starts doing these things, it's high time we did something about it. The next week or so, they started raising questions about some employee of his as a page, Bobby's, Bobby Baker. And the next week or so, President Kennedy called me in and said, I'm very distressed that Bobby Baker has been having conversations with some bad people out at Las Vegas and some bad people over to Dominican Embassy, some bad people down at Miami, and I think you ought to get him to resign. And I said, well, Senator, Mr. President, I don't have any, I couldn't go tell him to resign. I didn't hire him. He's employed by all the Senate.
Right.
He got his job. He was there before I came. He's there now. But I am his friend, and if there's something that he could do, tell me what it is. Has he done something wrong? And he said, well, these are the things that happened. And he went ahead and related about what these taps show. And he said, I asked Mike Mansfield and Dirksen to come down, and I talked to them about it. Or I asked Hoover to go out and report to him. I've forgotten which. And he said Hoover is going to meet him out at Mike's house. Well, Hoover went out there and told them all these taps. I don't think he told them they were the result of taps. But he told them that he had heard Bobby talking. And it's not really anything really vicious. It's a lot of women and a lot of talking and a lot of bragging and a lot of gossip, but it's not anything that's bad for the nation. Might have been some petty thievery that I don't know anything about, but generally it was just a lot of big talk. And but they got his job at Mansfield's house by sending Hoover out there. Then the president called me in the next night after this and said that he wished that I'd get Bobby to resign. I said, well, I'd be glad to tell him you think he ought to resign. He said, well, if he doesn't, he's really going to get in trouble. I said, well, is there any indication if he does resign, he won't get in trouble? Does he serve any purpose that? I just don't know enough about it. No, he said, I just don't know. I think, though, he ought to resign. And, of course, Bobby never did deliver the votes. Bobby was a Kerr man and was a Johnson man.